Hello everyone. Today is April 3rd, 2014, and welcome to Ontology Summit 2014, the second synthesis session for technical tracks and hackathon. My name is Michael Gröninger, and together with Leo Overst, we are the co-chairs for this year's Ontology Summit. The purpose for today is to have a second round. About a month ago, after the first round of technical tracks, we had an initial synthesis session where we gathered a lot of the different threads of discussions and all of the ideas that were raised in various presentations. And over the past 6 weeks since then, we've had a second round of technical presentations from each of the tracks. And so today we are revisiting this synthesis. And one of the objectives for today will be to see and to make sure that we have enough material from which the editors for the Ontology Summit communique can then craft a communique, which we will be reviewing over the next few weeks prior to the symposium at the end of April. The editors for the communique are myself, Leo Overst, Todd Schneider, and Francesca Quattri. So the agenda for today, I will give a few opening remarks and some thoughts and present kind of an initial outline that the editors have been discussing and will be using. And from then, we will hear from each of the tracks, track A, common reusable semantic content, track B, making use of ontologies in tools, services, and techniques, track C, overcoming ontology engineering bottlenecks, track D, tackling the variety problem in big data, and we'll also have a summary report of the hackathon projects from the hackathon that was conducted last weekend. After that, we will have an open discussion, which Leo Overst will moderate. And this will be, again, trying to look at all the material that people are presenting and try to see how we can fit that material into the communique. And there may be some discussion over where things fit, maybe a few clarifications on the outline. But the idea will be at the end of today, we will have, the editors, we will have a kind of an idea of how all the different contributions of people, all the participants within the Ontology Summit, how all of that experience and knowledge and insight can make its way into the final communique. Okay, so if you just pull up the slides, slide zero for the chair, or the also called the overview slides. This is just a few little kind of observations that I've had, and Leo blessed them. So we can go from there. So if you go to slide two, these were some outstanding questions. I think these have been some of the questions that have motivated, from my perspective at least, have motivated a lot of the activity that has been going on within the summit. I think one of the great things about this year's summit is that it's unearthing so many very interesting and challenging questions, and I'm hoping that can be one of the kind of the deliverables. I personally find challenging questions as being a great way to focus future work. And if a community can adopt a common set of research challenges or implementation challenges, practical challenges, engineering challenges, then we can accomplish a lot more, particularly in a lot of other collaborative efforts. So like I said, on slide two, I saw some questions that were related to the role of ontologies, track A, where kind of broadening out to like semantic content in general. But I think one of the central questions here is really, how are semantic web and big data applications actually using ontologies? And which ontologies are actually being used? Because in a lot of ways, a lot of people are developing ontologies, but if they're not developing them, kind of in the sense of kind of addressing them to be supporting particular applications, then we're going to get a lot of mismatch. And so on the one hand, one of the things we've seen throughout the summit so far are a wide variety of applications of ontologies in semantic web and big data applications. And it's been really interesting to see and to identify the various ontologies that are being used. But again, on the other side, there'd be this idea of, what ontologies are actually required by semantic web and big data applications? And is there, a mismatch here? If the ontologies meeting these requirements exist but are not being used, what are the reasons? And this speaks to some of the issues that I think will be addressed by, or have been addressed by, the ontology engineering bottlenecks track. So why aren't ontologies being used if they exist? But also, there's the question of, well, if these ontologies don't exist, then is there some way that we can coordinate efforts across all of our different communities to actually design these ontologies so that they can support the applications that people really want to be able to be using? So if you go to slide three, some questions, additional questions, maybe focusing in on ontologies and on the use of ontologies. So some of the things that have come out of track B kind of related to scalability. But one question would be, I mean, we recognize that scalability is a big challenge, but is it really the fundamental challenge for using ontologies in the web? And what are some of these other challenges? And, you know, how can we address the issue of scalability and its trade-off with, you know, with the, if you will, the expressiveness of the ontologies people are building? Another question of using ontologies is perhaps maybe some of the history of where a lot of the applied ontology community, say, have come from. A lot of the work there kind of arising out of biomedical applications, engineering applications, other kinds of scientific applications, you know, ontologies for chemistry, et cetera. You know, these were designed for, say, specific kinds of applications. But in this summit, we've been looking at how the semantic web and big data are looking at ontologies. And so is the design and applications on the of ontologies on the web really fundamentally different than the existing techniques? And are we actually encountering new ontology engineering bottlenecks when we're looking at semantic web and big data applications? Or kind of looking at that first question, are these really kind of the same bottlenecks we've been encountering in ontology engineering in general, but now complicated by the kind of this major challenge of scalability? If we move to slide four, looking at the problems of semantic integration. So, you know, if we're looking at track D, right, looking at the variety problem in big data, I mean, this really, you know, screams for using ontologies for semantic integration. But one of the questions, I think this maybe, you know, we've been kind of maybe dancing around in some of the discussions, have been, well, you know, there are techniques for semantic integration, say, within the applied ontology community, you know, things like ontology mappings and whatnot. But, you know, are these really adequate for tackling the variety problem in big data applications? And if they're not adequate, why? You know, what's the reason there? Do we need new techniques? Or, again, is this the issue of scalability? Or, you know, what are the fundamental challenges there? And then the other idea would be, you know, what are these? Can we extract some challenge problems, some benchmarks from big data applications to guide future work in ontology integration? So, you know, using these benchmark problems as ways of both guiding future work, but also evaluating future techniques. Like the idea being keeping a lot of the work that's done in applied ontology community by keeping it grounded in practical applications that people really need to support. And it looks like I have a funny slide number in here. Slide five of five is kind of the agenda for today. So what we're going to be doing is hearing from each of the tracks, and I forgot to leave out track. I left out track E, which is the reporting from the hackathon last week. But the idea will be we'll be hearing from people from each of the tracks and their synthesis, the synthesis from their perspective as track co-champions of all the work that's been done within their track and other things that always happens within the summit, like the interconnections and the relationships. Because a lot of the problems that we're facing, you can think of these tracks as just being different perspectives on similar kinds of problems. So on this slide here, we just have all of the, just reminding everyone of who all the track co-champions are. And then at the end, we'll have a discussion about the communique, and you can see the four editors who are there. So then in a bonus slide six of five, I guess that's a bonus, we have the communique outline, which the editors have been discussing. And it's very similar, to, I think, to the outline that we saw coming out of the first synthesis section, but just to kind of remind people, we're organizing the communique around these fundamental issues. And I mean, there's a kind of a loose correspondence to the tracks, but it's not meant to be like that. That's not a one-to-one correspondence between tracks and sections. I think each of the sections maybe has a primary contributions from particular track or so, but there's a lot of interaction here. And so the idea is if we can have focus on what some of the fundamental themes are, then each of the tracks can participate and contribute material as they see fit, as they see appropriate. And then the editors can kind of shape this and craft this into the final communique. So section two of the communique, we're looking at shareable, reusable ontologies, kind of looking again at what's the range of semantic content that's being used on the web, what ontologies are available, are being used, are required, and where can we find this content, right? So linked open vocabularies, ontology repositories, because that's the other kind of thing. We can have all the content that's needed, but if people can't find it, then we will not have succeeded. Section three will be looking at how ontologies are actually being used. So looking, focusing not just on the content, but on the use. And so it's really more the how, you know, like, so how are ontologies and semantic content being used? How are they being shared? How are they being reused? And there's been very interesting discussions, coming out of track A on ontology reuse. And then another question, like, what's the role of ontologies in these applications? And this is something that's been touched upon in earlier summits, particularly the summit making the case for ontologies. There was this idea of having a kind of a taxonomy of ontology applications. But I think this year really kind of allows us to kind of explore in this big data and semantic web context exactly how these ontologies are used and what the role they play. Then section four, we will look at barriers and bottlenecks. Again, this is kind of like primary contributions from track C, but you know, everyone I think has identified barriers because, you know, so what are the barriers to the use of existing content, the sharing of existing content, what are the barriers to reuse? So you can see how, you know, tracks A, B, C, D, and E are really addressing some of these issues. And what are the barriers to actually developing the semantic content that's required? So like, I'm not just focusing on the application, but also focusing on the design and evaluation of the ontologies. And then finishing up with conclusions, recommendations, and a lot of hopefully very interesting and fruitful challenge questions. So those are just a few thoughts and a presentation of the outline. And so now what we will do, we will be going through each of the tracks. They will present their synthesis, kind of incorporating all the insights they've gathered over the past several months of the summit. And we'll kind of go through each of the tracks. And then at the end, like I say, we will have a open discussion on all the ideas that we're hearing today. So up next, we have track A, Common Reusable Semantic Content. Gary's presenting.
So Gary Bergcross, one of the co-chairs of the Common Semantic Content Reuse track, along with Mike Bennett and Andrea Western. And Mike is unable to make it, and I think Andrea is having a little bit of communication problems, so I'll try to summarize the summary that we the synthesis that we have currently. So if we go to slide two, we summarize the scope and mission of track A, which fits into the overall theme of the summit. Wise reuse of semantic content can play an important role in this. We note there's a broad range of possible reuse from large ontologies, but also module ontologies, design patterns, vocabularies, conceptual models, a range of things, a spectrum of things. Now, along this spectrum, we note there are representational language issues as well as conceptual and pragmatic issues. And also we note that reuse is not a goal in itself, which was a widely discussed topic among some of the sessions. But through wise reuse, we hope to be able to reduce work and avoid bottlenecks and the burden of developing quality ontologies, and we also want to avoid the creation of semantic silos, which was actually mentioned by some of our speakers. Within the scope of our discussion also is relationships with other track areas, such as the role of tools, which are important in reuse. Okay, moving to slide three, summarizes our approach. We had two sessions and six main speakers with some introductory material. We generated lots of discussion on the forum and also lots of work as part of some of the hackathons, which we mentioned in passing later on. It includes the role of OORs, repositories. Now, we can move to slide 4, which just summarizes our talks, our speakers. We had a good range of people doing introductory material, talking about reasoning, talking about representation, and talking about the use of ontologies and such in big data and linked open data. We were perhaps a little bit more concentrated on linked open data than big data, but note that our speakers did address what was called big linked open data, such as in Kingsley's talk at the bottom here. Moving on to slide 5, I have a few slides very briefly on the hackathons, which there were two hackathons which sort of touched on reuse in some way, and two of the co-chairs were involved in those. The first one here was Mike's effort, exploring the risk topic, use of and the use of diverse ontologies on the topic of travel risk. They used existing data as a bottom-up foundation for this work, along with some existing models and also a visual ontology modeling tool. The next slide, slide 6, shows the resulting pattern that was developed. The new pattern is in blue, connecting to other things in as an application area, green or light blues, using existing ontology patterns or ontologies. I'm not going to talk more about that here because we have separate presentation on hackathons elsewhere. Slide 7 represents a second hackathon, which Andrea participated in, Amanda's organized hackathon on VOCREF, vocabulary and ontology characteristics related to evaluation of fitness. They used AL functional syntax to ease merge issues on merging ontologies, which helps with reuse. So perhaps more from them later on when hackathons are discussed. Moving on to slide 8, some issues. This slide makes a point, such as understanding how content is being used, which may involve checking competency questions of current efforts to capitalize on candidates for reuse. It mentions the role of good communications of ontologies. Tooling and modularity are issues here. The importance of semantic tool integration into big data or mainstream tools was widely discussed in session 2 around John Sowa's interoperability talk and related discussion on the forum. How to handle learning curve for semantics was also an issue discussed. Now, moving to slide 9, conditions for reuse, I have a long list of things here, so I won't go through these, but documentation, as noted before, is important. We also add that it would be helpful to standardize some reuse-oriented metadata for ontologies. People have talked about such things as vocabularies to find relevant ontologies. And then below, we have an 8-item list to consider, ranging from representations of ontologies to trust, and when in the project cycle it is best to consider the reuse options. This is a pitfall that was discussed as part of the bottleneck track, which you found very relevant and interesting. So some good connections with other tracks were noted here, which may be integrated into the communique. Moving on to slide 10, we have a first of two slides on tooling. Note that there's a lot of overlap with the tooling discussion and reuse. OORs, for example, were mentioned as important tools to provide good search capabilities and documentation. Another point noted by Michelle Dumontier was that we live in an increasingly linked data world, and we have actually many resources that we might be able to reuse. So finding the right thing to reuse, using such things as linked open vocabulary, LOV, which was mentioned by Kingsley, that may be an important tool to use. Moving on to the second slide on tooling, slide 11, we have more on toolings discussing their use in modular ontologies, which provide lower hanging fruit for broader reuse within the overall life cycle. The importance of tools playing together was also noted, and portions of the hackathon experience maybe can also add some information on this particular point. I mentioned controlled natural language tools here, several of which were discussed on the forum, and some of us think we're at a useful point, and this type of tool deserves more focused work. Moving on to slide 12, which is a best practice slide, It continues on this theme of modularity and small patterns to focus on and aggressiveness theme. Here we make the observation that modularity from the point of view of the user is as important as modularity for the knowledge engineer. Again, our hackathon or ODP hackathon, which Mike organized, may provide some contextual discussion of that aspect and how the same pattern may be applied to several different contexts and aligned to other ontologies as needed. We note that much work remains to be done to develop best practices from models of ODPs and the variability across its uses, context, and time. This is a topic that Pascal touched on in his presentation. Getting closer to finishing up, the best practices part two in slide 13 provides a more detailed list of suggestions on best practices, such as expressing certain concepts in OWL, the role of labels, axiomatic constraints, largely based on the session and forum discussions and Andrea's previous write-up of a synthesis, a draft synthesis. So there's a fair amount of material to use there. Slide 14 continues the best practice discussion, talks about the separation of class and property reuse. The use of SCOS as a tool for labeling is noted, but although there are weaknesses to things like SCOS to understand also. And finishing up with slide 15 on ontology management for reuse. Of course, repositories and metadata play a role here. And again, the hackathon experience may be relevant, but there's a I want to make the point, there's a socio-tech aspect of such management. And at the very bottom, you see sort of, it's a quote from Mark Gahagan, who was at, talked about this, one of the Santa Barbara boot camps. Governance needs a process and its enforcement process should include open consideration, comment, revision, and acceptance. I think proper management will allow much wiser reuse over time. That concludes our synthesis for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary. Yeah, a lot of really interesting content covered there. Yeah, it's going to be quite a challenge to cram everything in, so thank you very much. So for track B, making use of ontologies, tools, services, and techniques, track co-champion Christoph Lange will be presenting. Christoph?
Okay, I'm here. Today I'll be presenting the outcome so far of the track on making use of ontologies, track B, tools, services, and techniques. The track was well co-organized with my co-champion Alan Rector, who cannot be here today. Well, on slide two, I tried to capture the overall synthesis. So far, it seems that we need a lot of lightweight approaches on the web of data, on the semantic web, and for big data, because heavyweight approaches will fail with big amounts of data. that's a common theme that we've observed in almost all of the presentations that we've had. We've had six presentations in track B. So for example, on slide two, you see how this lightweight aspect can be found in the three presentations of our second session. So Jose Maria Garcia's talk on the linked services initiative, a new approach to modeling web services for describing the semantic of web services. This could be summed up as, there have been heavyweight approaches to modeling semantics of web services and they have failed. So now we are doing it in a lightweight way. Mike Bergman's presentation on the Open Semantic Framework, which is, a package that integrates a lot of state-of-the-art semantic web tools for building complex applications. This could be summarized as a little RDF goes a long way because it's all based on a common RDF representation of knowledge and data. And Maria Poveda Villalon's presentation on linked open terms, a lightweight ontology engineering, or I should rather say vocabulary engineering methodology, could be summarized as, we need lightweight ontologies, which are also called vocabularies, and they can also be engineered systematically, like heavyweight ontologies were engineered in the old ages, but obviously the engineering methodology is a bit different. Let me go into a bit more detail about these. Slide three, lightweight semantic web services. So until a few years ago, one would have thought that web services exchanged heavy messages, XML over SOAP, and that they would be modeled using heavyweight ontologies based on, well, rich profiles of OWL. But actually, the reality of web services is, as it was described by Jose, that, well, lightweight REST interfaces are quite popular, and, well, that people would rather like, well, not to model the semantics of a web service first, but to engineer the service bottom up and, well, add more and more semantics using lightweight linked data style technology. On slide 4, a bit more detail about the Open Semantic Framework, which enables complex web applications based on a canonical RDF data model. So the OSF deals with structured, semi-structured, but also unstructured data and represents all of them in a common RDF structure. There is, to be honest, there is a bit of OWL on top. And what this enables on the user interface of these web applications is that the ontology structures inform how user interface elements are to be displayed, how they behave, how the content is to be visualized, and how relevant content is filtered, and also how complex content structures are to be navigated. So lightweight ontologies enable a lot of useful services in this system. Slide 5, about Maria's methodology for engineering vocabularies. It is an agile engineering technique that where you first, well, obviously, as in almost all methodologies, you determine your needs, like the terms that you would need to describe your data, the data in your domain. Then you would look them up in existing vocabularies, and that's now a big advantage of big data and the semantic web, that a lot of lightweight ontologies are already around, and there are services like the previously mentioned LOV, linked open vocabularies, which you can use to find these vocabularies. So it's encouraged by this methodology that you find reusable vocabularies. But, of course, sometimes you will have to create your own ones, but then it's encouraged that you link your own vocabularies to existing ones. And this methodology also supports continuous evaluation of your ontology while it is being built in an agile way. On slide 6, we see that we also had this lightweight theme in the talks of session 1. There was a presentation by Chris Welty on Watson, the natural language query answering engine, and well, it used a combination of a lot of reasoning techniques, I should say, but you didn't see any of the traditional heavyweight ontological reasoning technologies. Actually, there was very little use of ontologies in a traditional sense. Then there was a talk about by Alan Rector, which touched on the practice of using ontologies in biomedical applications where you have huge bodies of knowledge, and there it seems to be a common practice that you don't build ontologies to represent all of your knowledge, but that you, well, that you deal with data and let it be data, but that you choose selected ontologies and terms from these ontologies to annotate select part of these data to make them more, well, usable in applications. And finally, there was a talk by Till Mosakowski about the Onto-IOP interoperability initiative, in the context of which also the Onto-Hub system is being developed, which also participated in the hackathon. And part of this initiative, I mean, it's also about making heavyweight ontology languages more interoperable, but another aspect of this initiative is about retrofitting linked data principles into these heavyweight ontology languages to make them well, to make them easier to reuse and to connect to each other. So if I may make a preliminary conclusion on slide 7, it is like that ontological applications on the web of data, which is big and has a lot of big data, need to be lightweight in order to work at all. But we've seen from all of these approaches and systems that have been presented that lightweight does not mean that the applications will no longer be smart. They will just have to be built using different techniques. And it seems that RDF is a useful common denominator for such lightweight big data applications, in that it allows you to give things a common structure and to introduce common vocabularies and to reuse vocabularies and to reuse other data sets, while it enforces low ontological commitments, so it doesn't tie you into certain heavyweight systems, but it still allows you to link to more complex descriptions when you need them. This was pointed out in the discussion in session 2. So with this preliminary conclusion, the track B synthesis ends for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Christoph. Very, very interesting lessons learned from the different presentations, and nice controversy. I see it's starting a little bit of discussion in the chat. Thanks very much. So for next up is track C, overcoming ontology engineering bottlenecks, and I believe Matthew West will be presenting that synthesis.
Hi, yes, this is Matthew West. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Matthew. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, so this is synthesis 2 for overcoming ontology engineering bottlenecks. And I'm Matthew West, and my fellow co-champions are Christoph Janowitz and Pascal Hitzler. If you could go to slide 2, please. That's our track mission, which is to identify bottlenecks that hinder the large-scale development and reuse of ontologies and identify ways to overcome them. And just by way of an opening remark, it's worth saying that this has produced what can perhaps best be described as eclectic results looking for these bottlenecks. They can turn out to be completely unrelated things. So what we haven't discovered is some obvious theme to bottlenecks that you can use to group them by. And I think we'll see that as we go through these slides. You'll get some flavor of that. Our second session had, we had three speakers. They were all very interesting and very different presentations. Oscar Corcho was talking about, not quite 10 rules for ontology engineering deadlocks. And the other two speakers were talking about ways of automating things that were a particular problem. So in the case of Darval, it was about how to at least computer assist the markup of large amounts of data or documents. And with Peter Haas, it was about using tools and tools to actually help ontology engineering. And that, of course, because we were interested not just in what the bottlenecks were, but how you can overcome them. And, of course, automation is one of the key ways of overcoming them. And those were two very good examples of how that can be done. So moving on to slide 4, these are some of the problem areas that turned up. Ontologies being perceived as costly, confusion over the level of expressiveness needed, who's going to develop all these shared ontologies anyway, how do we do quality control, what level of semantics is needed, what tools should we be using, and how to reuse successfully, and why are ontologies in English? So those were just the headlines, and I've got a slide for each of those. So moving on to slide 5, ontologies are perceived as costly. So ontologies, this is a perception which needs to be overcome, that in general ontologies are part of a relatively large project overall, and they're a relatively small part of that project. And just because they're hard to develop, which quite often they are, doesn't mean that as a proportion of the overall project cost, that it's a large proportion of that cost. And getting that difficulty cost equation right is quite important. Timely and appropriate ontology will, in any case, reduce overall project costs if you're doing it properly and in the right way. because it will make things explicit that are going to trip you up and cause you problems and rework later. So, you know, it's one of those things of just doing the right things in the right order, and having an ontology is just one of those things that you should be doing at the right time. But of course, you need to be able to make the case to be successful. But it's a perception problem. Okay, moving on to slide 6. Confusion over the level of expressiveness needed. One of the things that can be perceived is that, you know, either it's right to have something that's very expressive, or it's right to have something that has very restricted expressiveness, and that one of those must be right and the other one must be wrong. And the real thing is that different applications may well require different levels of expressiveness, and indeed one application may require different levels of expressiveness. So expressiveness is important for what I would call descriptive ontologies, where the queries aren't known at design time. But when you do know the queries, it's often possible to construct a more restrictive ontology that actually is designed to answer those queries with improved performance. And one can certainly, with large volumes of data, that could have obvious benefits. And indeed, you may need multiple ontologies or a master and subsets to meet all the needs in a domain. That's just how life is. So moving on to slide 7, and that's okay, I should say, is the other thing there. It's okay that's what you need to do. You need to make sure that those ontologies are consistent with each other. You have more than one, but that's just how it is. Who will develop all the shared ontologies? Well, many ontologies will, of course, be private, even though they are being shared within one organization, because that's how you integrate your organization's data. But some ontologies will be public. So whilst, say, accounts will be private, the product catalog is likely to be public. Public administration data and standards are also going to be public. And the key is trying to pin the tail on the authoritative source and identifying who the authoritative source is for some shared ontology. Now, with the product catalog, it's fairly obvious. It's the company who's producing the catalog. for other data, that's not always the case, and people aren't necessarily aware of their obligation, and certainly in many cases aren't doing very much about it. So I would say that it's BIPM who should be developing a units of measure ontology. You know, government should be developing ontologies that are related to their laws. Standards bodies should be developing ontologies common to, for example, multiple governments or multiple countries. So just as an example of how that would be. Slide 8, how do we do quality control? Test is the answer. It's just the same as software development, quality control and data control. And inferencing tools can help with logical consistency of your ontology, but there are many more errors that can be made beyond logical consistency, of course. Slide 9, what level of semantics is needed? The first priority is identity, and we saw that in one of the previous tracks with lightweight ontologies, you know, sort of vocabularies. You're really talking about the identity issue there. Rather than the semantics and the axioms and all those sorts of things. Just giving the same name for the same thing so that you can find out that you were talking about the same thing has enormous value. Level of semantics required varies from application to application, domain to domain in practice. So some of the things that, some examples there, apparently engineering requires quite a lot of semantics. Life sciences tend to be medium, and publishing much less because the focus there is indeed on vocabularies. What tools to use? The question here was, you know, should you be starting with heavyweight tools, you know, cutting out from the outset and things like that? And the answer seems to be that it's really quite sensible to start with lightweight tools like Excel for collecting stuff together, and certainly for requirements development. But equally, you can't manage large complex ontologies with lightweight tools like Excel. You need something that enables you to manage things properly in order to have any hope of managing change over time. Slide 11, how to reuse successfully. Well, when you're selecting for reuse, two sides to this, selecting for reuse and designing for reuse. So when you're looking for something that you can reuse rather than reinvent, you need to remember that it's not actually an objective in itself. You're reusing because that's going to be cheaper and or give you integration benefits, which it still means cheaper. Determining requirements before reviewing candidate ontologies to reuse is critical, or else, you know, if you don't know what you want, how will you be able to recognize it when you see it? And reuse is successful, of course, but it does reduce the costs and increases the quality of what you're doing. So the other side of that is how can you design something so that it will be more likely to be reused? And the first thing to note is that you're unlikely to be reusable unless being reusable is one of your design objectives. And the common errors are, the ontology is overconstrained, and one particular example of that is range and domain being set at too low a level of abstraction, which may be the highest level in the domain that it was designed to support, but there may be a higher level, which it may be a cross-domain relation, in which case you need to have it set at a level that reflects that, or else you'll restrict the way that it can be used. And very often you find local constraints are implemented that are not generally valid, not just range and domain, but other constraints as well. So finally we have, why are ontologies in English? One of the problems if you're not English is that anything that you want to use is in English, and it assumes that no one wants any other language as well. And this just isn't valid. Now, there's one thing, that it's pragmatic that IDs should be in the language of the developer, and that's just about helping the development and debugging process. But in fact, those identifiers should really be considered to be computer readable, and not something that users would ever be shown. So you really need IDs that those IDs are hidden from the user. So from the user point of view, they should be able to choose the language for the labels that they see, and that the ontology should provide for those labels to be developed in whatever languages the ontology needs to be used in. And that way you can get some separation between the pragmatics of the IDs sensibly being in the language of whoever's developing the ontology from the users who are wanting to use it. Okay, and that's what I had to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matthew. Yeah, quite comprehensive, and nice kind of illustration of how all the different tracks have a lot of interactions between each other. Thank you. So up next for track D, tackling the variety problem in big data, Anne Thessen will be presenting. Anne?
Okay, great. First, I'd like to apologize a little bit. I'm recovering from a cold, so I don't know how I sound. Anyway, Ken Buklowski and I were the co-champions for track D. And our focus was using ontologies to help manage the variety problem in big data. And so we had a couple goals, and one of those goals was basically just to kind of think about and articulate the ways that big data sets vary, the sources of variety, and then think about how ontologies might help us cope with that variety. And at the end, hopefully we can develop some use cases to try to move forward on developing some of these ideas. So let's go to slide 2. So just to think about big data again, big data can be big in terms of volume, velocity, and variety. And of course, the focus of this track was to think about big data in terms of variety. And so we identified a couple sources of variety before the summit even started, but there were a few more that we identified that we hadn't even really thought about before we had all of our speakers come in. So the first source of variety, of course, is domain-specific knowledge. And by this, we are not only talking about different terms that people use, different levels of granularity in the way that people describe things, but also the fact that our knowledge changes over time. So what we know about a specific thing or how it works 30 years ago is probably going to be different than today, and also the way that the state of reality is may change over decades. So that's a source of variety. There are different ways that data sets are governed can cause can be a source of variety. Big data can vary in its structure and format, and it can vary in completeness. And when we say completeness, we're thinking along the lines of metadata mostly. So different data sets have different degrees of metadata completeness, and they're specified to a different degree. Data can vary in its provenance. Not only can the data sets have different provenance, but some data sets might, not that it doesn't have provenance, but it doesn't have the provenance information available. Same with workflows. Data sets can vary in different workflows, of course, but they can also just not be accompanied by any workflow information at all. And of course, different data sets will have different privacy concerns, and even data within different parts of the data set may have different privacy concerns. And again, here we come back to the identity and terminology issue, which you have anytime you're dealing with human language. So those were all, well, not all, those were some of the sources of variety in big data that we talked about in the summit with all of our presenters. So how can ontologies help these sources of variety in big data? And now I'm on slide 3. Ontologies can help with virtually all of these, and our speakers discussed this when they were here, but we can use ontologies to help represent background knowledge, and many ontologies do that. We can use ontologies to help annotate data and metadata. So the problem of using different terms and not having very complete metadata can be helped by ontologies that can normalize terms and that can automatically add metadata. An ontology can describe the data structure and data provenance and workflows. And I know there are ontologies being developed right now for describing data sets, and there are provenance ontologies out there. So those ontologies can help sort of standardize and describe those aspects of a data set. Ontologies can help describe data governance. They can facilitate data integration. And this also goes back to fleshing out metadata and normalizing terms. The more things are normalized or the more things are related to each other, the easier it is to combine things from different places. And ontologies can facilitate hypothesis generation, and I think we saw that with Eric Chan's talk in the OODA loop. And ontologies can help record privacy needs. Sorry. So looking at slide 4, we have some use cases that we've identified from looking at the different speakers that we had. So there are quite a few here that we've come up with, and we'll probably just choose a subset of these to develop further. But the first one is using ontologies to help harvest data from data partners that has a lot of variety. And we saw that with Nathan Wilson's talk and with the Uceda Sosa talk, where there are many different data sets out there that are being brought together. And we saw, so there's a use case with modular development, and we saw that with Ruth Doerr's talk and all the pieces that she is putting together for her project. Ontologies can help with reuse, and that was pretty much with data reuse, and that was pretty much a theme across all of the speakers that we had. Ontologies can help formalize existing informal models. And so we saw that with Eric Chan and Ruth Doerr's talk with their projects. We can use ontologies to help develop extension points. We can use ontologies to involve communities in our projects. And Ruth Doerr kind of exemplified this because her project was very interdisciplinary, and what she was working on was very important for a local community, and so there was a very significant social component in what she was doing. And she was using ontologies to bring together data sets from very different sources and very different disciplines. We can have a use case about ontologies describing a governance framework, and we saw that in Chisholm's talk. We can use ontologies to help with a vocabulary pipeline, and vocabularies and terms are very important for reuse and for ontology building, so that would be an important one. We also can have use cases to help with pattern matching, which can facilitate some of the integration and normalization. And we also saw in the Uceda Sosa talk information ecosystems and ways that ontologies can help build that. So that was the end. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I really like that, the use cases idea. I think that's, again, like I mentioned in the beginning comments, coming up with some challenge problems maybe based on these use cases would be a great way to focus ontology application design and future work. Thank you. Okay, so next up, we will have a report, a summary report on the hackathon projects. Primarily kind of what's put into the communique, but as I mentioned before, the hackathon occurred last weekend and looked very, very interesting. And I think Anatoly Levenchuk will be giving an overview of that. Anatoly, are you there?
Yeah. And what about hackathon preliminary results? This is preliminary results. Many participants are not yet prepare full results, and it will be about 1 month to deal with all the materials that was developed during hackathon, not even discussed, but created during all the artifacts that created during the hackathon, to analyze what they have an experience of and present it in symposium. And I briefly comment only organizational things because this is very interesting, because this is practical experience of practical ontology related work. Slide 2, please. We have 6 individual hackathon projects that happened. This is a very big figure because we have 47 participants had fun of collective hacking, ontology hacking. To understand what this figure means, now we have 37 members in our chat. And in hackathon participate more people than in our synthesis session. And most of the projects was planned to have 1 day. Actually, they take 2 days. And some of them, I know, have 3 days. And up to now, most of them, most of the projects, maybe not most of the projects, but at least half of them, have a report preparing. And actual work will continue during report preparing. And this is very interesting. The willing people to work was more than planned. Or maybe this is not understanding of current technology level. Because our estimation of what we can do in this ontology in 1 day was not fit in every team. Most of produced artifacts, now we have at public repositories of this project. And this is very interesting because several years ago it was very difficult with infrastructure of collective development. For example, issue tracker, for example, repository, and you should have special kind of repository for every community. Up to now, you have, for example, GitHub, and most of the participants simply use GitHub, not OntoHub, not other services, and GitHub have Wiki services, specifically for one small project. GitHub have issue tracker, and GitHub have repository with version control. And most of the participants use these GitHub services. And very few have used their own repositories. But usual in the place where we not have it public and have no issue tracker and have no wiki related to this repository. This is very interesting because a couple of years ago it was impossible, it seems to me, to have such a service taken for free. And the same about communications. We now not need it in central communications mean. Because up to 10 people, Google Hangout and many other services provide infrastructure to such activity. And it means up to my experience that this year hackathon is different in organizing structure from hackathon that can be provided a couple of years ago. It means that collective ontology hacking, collective coding, collective document writing, and any collective knowledge-related project now can be quickly gathered, quickly worked, and quickly published results. It is very interesting, and it seems to me this is tremendous shift, organizational shift, and not reflected by community yet. And maybe hackathon should provide this organizational shift in collective ontology development in means of ontology engineering to the community. And I think that more about individual project we see in Ontology Summit Symposium. And just now, simply quickly review what happened in the individual project. And slide 3, please. Reference data for anime and manga, semantic linking and publishing of diverse data sets. The goal of this hackathon was very interesting. Take all the pipeline of ontology development and integration work from fetching data from original databases, developing or reusing ontology for data integration, actual data integration, and then publishing of semantic data on the web. It was not done completely, but you can see results in a repository, and it appear more time-consuming task that was expected. More time to work with software, more time to fetch data, more time to understand what data is, and simply today is not enough. It seems to me, I ask the people in this hackathon, is this hackathon team, if they not use ontologies, whether they perform this task, fetch data from two databases and publish it on the web. For sure, yes, it can be done in one day for this small amount of data. But ontology adds overhead about 2 days for this task. But another comment was that for this small task, it was not enough value to use ontologies. This is overhead. And maybe when it will be 33 databases and maybe different data pages and hundreds of data names, it will be ontology worse enough to use. And this is a question. What complex task it should be with databases to use ontologies? Because when we start to develop all these ontology data patterns, all these namespaces, all these heavy mechanics, it adds tremendous amount simply of new names. And all this reference data library of ontology ISO 15926, huge amount of new names that was not in data. And it is very heavy overhead. And this is the questions of this hackathon. By the way, it was fail of all simple ontology reuse for creation work. It is a dozen it of on a network and no one fit to actual databases. But we can use and successfully used engineering ontology of ISO 15926. It was helpful. And this is a very specific thing for reuse guys. And slide 4. Ontology design patterns and semantic abstractions in ontology integration. It was very interesting because you see the team of 9 participants, and this girl from Russia was from the first hackathon team, and it was a transfer of members to the second day due to exchange of results of first day hackathon. This is simply due communication, and it shows that this is the same domain, and we can change team members, and this is somehow one set of a project from one domain, not different domains, but still we cannot have some kind of general remark for communique from the content of these projects, from the topics of these comments of these projects, but only from organizational, it seems to me, things, because this was very diverse project, very diverse, more diverse than we can imagine, but still, this is the same community. Results, it was developed one ontology that fit to transport, but after this, after this hackathon, it appears that it can be generalized to many. It was generalized to many flow, operational research, workflow, and other flow domains. There are many of flow domains: financial flow, workflow, and many others. It is very interesting what happened with this flow ontology. And the next slide. 5. Optimized Sparkle performance management via native API. This is interesting because this is provides small but discussion after hackathon ended and results publishing. And what topic discussed? Topic discussed about methodology. Because this is benchmarking, you know, this is usual discussion. If you benchmark something, what is methodology? But this benchmark was not about different application, but authors of this hackathon want to measure difference between usual Sparkle via HTTP performance and Sparkle via native API. But up to me, this is narrowest way of using native API. Because if you have native API, you have slightly more than simply Sparkle queries. You have can more queries, and this can lead to more question about not only methodology, but about performance. And what they show us, first results, very, very interesting. They tell us, I ask of other people to ask them by themselves, that RDF Triple Store in general have the same performance that SQL stores, that relational databases, and they wonder whether they should next time have a benchmarking of RDF triple stores and relational databases, and how to compare it. But there is the same speed. I ask them in private. But they tell that up to 5 joint relational database comparison with triple store. But if we have more than five joins with complex logics, RDF triple store usually have more performance. And this is very interesting, and they have more interesting scene in their hackathon. And please communicate, discuss, and ask them. And the next slide. On the hub consolidation. This on the hub consolidation is virtual, but if virtual in Moscow was three men in Moscow and other six from nine members of this team from the different countries, every participant from different countries, this team was 10 participants locally. This is a record of our hackathon and one remote. And what another thing about this hackathon? This is specific organization of collective work. You have 22 open issues, and they simply fixing issues. This is classical hackathon. You have issues open, you simply close it. And they for sure have brainstorming, but very focused, because issues is very focusing your work. And this is very interesting, and we not knowing much from their report what they do actually, but this hackathon, it seems to me very interesting from our organizing point of view, and for sure for this topic, because this is OntoHub, this is Ontology Hub. And next thing, please. Semantic annotation of the Ontolog community environment. And this is our purple wiki, next generation of familiar purple wiki, and results in GitHub as usual. And I provide in this slide, seventh slide, the test website, because they not publish this slide except their materials. And this is preliminary website, is very slow, but have a look to this slide. This is very interesting to see what is this. And for this slide, you already want to invite invite designer with font size, with pictures preference, but not simply programmer. Because as we know, when people work with semantics, it's not for human reading. This is not for humans, this is for computers, and all semantic websites look like websites for computers. This is very interesting project, and we see that this is much more human readable now, and much more services, and I wonder when this will be not test version, but actual working version of all the Ontolog community environment, Ontolog summit infrastructure. Eighth slide. Ontological catalog of ontology and metadata vocabulary. Ontology catalog, catalog of ontology. And this is very interesting project. And this is completely another time zone. It was from USA, and results for sure in GitHub, and it seems to me it was much of brainstorming, much of work of core people, and many guest participants and semi-guest participants. And result is developing some kind of ontology about ontology and metadata core. It is very interesting because any reflectivity in any language, in any domain, is a very, very powerful, usually, very powerful thing. And I wonder what is this Warcraft top, and I want to see the final report. And I'm waiting for the actual result. But if you're interested, you can try to understand what they've done in this public repository. As I understand, this work not finished yet, and it will be continue. And moreover, this work can be continued from previous hackathon. This previous year hackathon and this year hackathon is project is some kind of regular meeting about evaluation of ontologies, ontological catalog of ontology, and this is very interesting. If we have this or similar project that continue next year, if next year will be hackathon, I hope it will be. The next slide, please. And now, see you in symposium when we can have demonstrations of several of the projects, maybe some kind of more synthesis. And I have a wish to other track synthesis take something from all these projects, and maybe my short presentation help to show what you should take from this project to your synthesis to communicate. Thank you.
Thank you, Natalie. Yeah, very exciting weekend from the hackathon. A lot of great results. Before we move on, just to say that last year there was the first year that we had the Hackathon Award, which was awarded to the best hackathon project as judged by the Ontology Summit and Symposium co-chairs. And we will have that again this year. It will be sponsored by the International Association of Ontology Applications. Judging will take place kind of during the symposium after the presentations of all the projects. And the award will be a great certificate from the association. And the team leader or leaders will receive a one-year free membership to the IAOA.
Great.
And, okay, so now I guess we'll open it up to general discussion, kind of about anything we've discussed today, but kind of focused in on what do we want to see within the communique, right? What's the content that we feel we want to see in the communique, and also possibly feedback on the outline and things like that. And, Leo, I think you'll be leading the discussion for that.
Yes. So thank you, folks. I think if you look on the last slide in Michael's introduction, it has the communique outline. I think that this is basically what we want to follow. What we want to bring up here in this discussion, of course, is if there's something crucial that's been left out. We think this is a good set of organizing principles. And we think that all the tracks can map into this in many cases in multiple ways. And then finally, we will have a conclusions and recommendations section at the end. So what we want to do in this discussion is, from your perspective as track champions, but also participants, more generally in the Ontology Summit this year, your view in how your what the contributions really are to the communique, and in the back of your mind also consider the prioritized or the important recommendations that you would make from the perspectives of your individual tracks. So let's open up the discussion now. We have not a whole lot of time, a little over a half hour, so we want to make sure that that we end up with a communique that everyone is really satisfied with. Have you heard anything today that makes you disagree about the structure or the tenets that we have in the communique outline? Focusing again on that last slide that Michael presented.
Okay, so I guess if people are okay with the outline, one of the nice things that I saw today were like a set of key points, key conclusions that the track co-champions identified. I saw this particularly today with Christoph's slide. And it's like Matthew's slides full of observations and things like that. So definitely going to be incorporating that kind of material. And if there's something that, people like a take-home message you want kind of related to that ideas, then make sure you kind of post them to the list because then, then it's available for everyone else to discuss. But also, kind of incorporate, the editors can incorporate that into the communique. But these kinds of conclusions, fundamental insights, take-home ideas, any of these kinds of synonyms I'm reaching for, is something that you want to have a real punch at the end of a particular section or the communique itself. So that would be great. Like I said, I saw it in a lot of the presentations today, so that was really good. And
And I think a venue for you is your individual synthesis page, these respective pages, because the editors will be reviewing those in particular over the next 2 weeks or so when we finalize this communique as to the contribution, extensive contribution of your tracks.
Right. And so I just to respond here to Gary's comment, the outline has no subtopic of things. We're not kind of producing this detailed outline in a way. What we'll be doing is using this outline as the way of doing the combination of all the material. And so I think the idea for next Thursday's meeting will be to kind of take a look at the draft communique that we've assembled from all this material. And at that point, we'll see kind of like the next level of detail, if that's okay with people. And then if there's something missing in that or something is not prominently enough discussed or, you see something that's not, that really should be a sub item that's not covered, then I think at the next week's meeting is where we would really focus in on that idea. Is that okay, Gary, or? He said sure. Is there anything else that people, other participants within the summit online today kind of saw as something, they learned or was very important from all the discussions? Somebody maybe who wasn't one of the co-champions, like I would just open it up to everyone else on the call today. Was there something that you thought was really powerful, impactful insight that maybe wasn't addressed by any of the track co-champions presentations today? This would be a great opportunity to raise that issue.
Hello, this is Gary. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So one of the things that I guess we might want to consider for inclusion, it isn't terribly visible here, but is the whole discussion of tools that can help with some of these bottlenecks. So I guess that would be included in that area you have outlined there.
Sorry, a discussion or a listing? I missed that.
Yeah, so something the communique could point to is that tools that might be useful for people in big data and linked open data to use to make their efforts a little easier.
Well, I think this kind of issue came up, I think, in previous years. And I think the way we treated it was we would have a pointer to a page in the summit. One of the summit pages that had that list, rather than say incorporating a list itself into the communique.
Yes, we might have types of tools. In other words, you know, the kinds of tools that would be of interest and useful for the various bottlenecks, et cetera, but then point to this other page because remember that, you know, it's a living document, and in the future we want people to actually add more tools as they become available and have the interest.
But definitely there'd be enough of a mention of this that there would be a pointer in the communique to such a page that would have the list.
Let's see. I'd actually saw Terry had his hand raised there for a second.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how to ask the question. So, but I'm missing the distinction between an ontology as a semantic content, and which is, you know, for reuse you need the semantics, but the ontology as a formal document. That probably changes and evolves, and I know that we talked a little bit about evolution of ontologies, but I'm a little confused about how an OWL ontology and an ontology in RDF are the same or different.
Well, I'm not quite sure what you're asking there because. We have a range of options, you know, RDFS, OWL, Common Logic, etc. And the focus in linked open data and semantic web is, of course, the first two primarily, but not,
exactly. That's my problem. We're talking about reusing the semantics, but in fact, the semantics are embedded in the medium that you're using to capture the ontology. Have we any thoughts on, or have we? Has anybody looked at the issue of whether an ontology in one of these forms is reusable in another environment with different syntaxes, if you will? Now, maybe this is why I didn't. Maybe this is why I turned off my question. And
well, there's always the. You know, language interoperability issue, so that we try to abstract away from as much as we can sometimes. In other words, you know, not translate directly from one language to another, even though we know that we have to do that periodically. So reuse, a bottleneck to reuse is, of course, if you have different knowledge representation languages, and sometimes that's extremely important.
I think actually that might have been addressed peripherally by Matthew's slide 6, like where you had this idea of you can have different versions of an ontology in these other languages. So, for example, you know, there's the first order, the common logic axiomatization for the process specification language. But as was presented in one of the early Track A sessions by Megan Katsumi, there's the you have the OWL axiomatization of PSL and a swirl axiomatization of PSL that captures as much as you can of the original ontology in that particular language.
Yes, and you know, many of the ontology developers, let's say foundational ontologies, they may have expressed their ontologies originally in first order logic. But then they also have translated, made a representation in, let's say, OWL, for example, because it's more widely used, with the understanding that the axioms that express the logic that you intend they're really annotations, or you have to go back to the original to see what the intent was. So, you know, Dolce and Dolce Light and BFO and BFO, you know, OWL version, etc. Andrea, I see you have your hand raised.
I just wanted to expand on that discussion a little bit. One of the things that came out from the VocRef hackathon that we started to go there, and we obviously have more work to do, was that the representation is different than the metadata and the semantics, and you might actually have, of an anthology, different representations that might have different characteristics, i.e. if you're just doing a straight vocabulary kind of thing, you'd have one rendering that maybe didn't allow reasoning, but you could also have another rendering that might be OWL that had a, you know, reasoning capabilities and had applications and more kinds of capabilities or features, you know, different features that were added in the full set of capabilities. And I think that's certainly something that we started talking about, and I think that's really valuable because depending on your application and your language, and we start to, I started to talk a little bit about that based on Sam Adams' paper that Jack Ring, you know, referenced in this one email, that your language of choice does influence what your reuse is, but in our semantic world, you have these semantics, and then you have expressions, and maybe those expressions or renderings or languages have different capabilities. And with this voc ref, we started to actually see that when we were having our discussions, and I think it's worth exploring that more, and then actually understanding, and maybe being very, you know, obvious or being very forthright about what encodings you have and what they're good for and how you might use them.
Good. Yes, I agree. And see, Peter, you have your hand raised.
I've typed up my question. So, I mean, not a question, but an observation that I have a feeling, I mean, I had that before, but I still do feel that we are not addressing the current big data practitioners adequately. I mean, by current big data practitioners, most of them are dealing with data, maybe still a lot of structured data, but data analytics. I mean, people who are using mathematical models, statistical techniques, and so on. Out of all the presentations, we haven't had a chance to see, for example, any case where application of an application that applied both mathematical models and semantic models, or maybe mathematical models taking advantage of semantic models or of an ontology. Filling that gap would probably help, and I know TrackD is poised to address that, particularly with Ken Bukowski, who's a pioneer in some of the statistical methodologies. So maybe in the TrackD synthesis or write-ups, I know Ken is not online, possibly maybe Anne can, and then Ken can work on that a little bit more. I mean, that's my personal view. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think that's good, Peter. Also, you know, there's this emerging new buzzword called deep learning, right, where it's really the kind of interpretations behind big data or above big data. So it includes, you know, statistical correlations and patterns, but also, you know, sometimes knowledge-based interpretations that would require, you know, perhaps, and we think so, you know, ontologies to describe it. So I would like to see that too. I think that, you know, that's important for the larger community.
Right, but I think if you could capture that onto the chat, I mean, that would be nice.
Right, but again, we need to have some material for that. Right, so the editors are strictly going to be that, editors. So
yes.
We're not going to be introducing new material because, So, yeah, I mean, if you can get Ken to contribute something along those lines or Anne to contribute something along those lines, then we can incorporate it.
Yeah, Leo, at least you can capture that thought onto the chat.
Okay, I'll try.
And Ken, if you can, and you might want to respond to that.
Yes, Anne. So Anne, you may want to, since Ken is not present, you may want to respond to that or take it back and discuss that with Ken if it's something that you feel you should contribute as your track.
But along the lines of Peter's comment, like, so are there other blind spots, I guess, for lack of a better word, that, you know, perhaps weren't covered by any, you know, track session, you know, for whatever reason, you know, some people were not able to present because of scheduling constraints. But are there any other, you know, potential blind spots that we might want to at least include a reference to within the communique? Like, you know, this is an important issue, and we recognize it's an important issue. It wasn't covered in this year's summit, but, you know, we still want to acknowledge it. Is there anything else along those lines? Okay, it's an oddly quiet response. I was expecting a whole barrage of hands there. One issue, I guess, maybe I might want to ask as well. So, like, in the communique outline, I mean, we focused more on particular issues. I was wondering, did people have any comments on, say, how the kind of hackathon would interact with that? I think last year the communique really didn't mention the hackathon at all. Amanda, you might correct me on that. You know, I think this year we'll kind of have, you know, where it comes up, where it's relevant to particular issues, will again point to the hackathon, at least the hackathon page, as kind of particular examples of things. Would that be okay with people?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think that hackathon should be parsed to different parts of communique by authors of the communique.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to contain a summary of the. I guess my point was, we're not going to be containing a summary of the hackathons. It'll mainly be references to the hackathon project, specific hackathon projects, as it is relevant to illustrate a particular point in the communique.
Yeah, I think that we need not in communique have presented particularly hackathon project, maybe
right.
A summary about organization.
Mm-hmm.
But you for sure can regard hackathon results like material, like text and other things from any other reports.
Mm-hmm.
The same kind.
Okay, good.
And simply take issue and at all.
Right. So then one other thing I mentioned at the beginning, too, in my introductory slides, I say was the idea of having some big challenge problems. One of the interesting things this year has been raising so many, so many questions, so many very interesting questions. And I was just wondering if I could, like, ask people, the track, I guess, co-champions in particular, but everybody, to, again, post on the synthesis pages of each track, or the community input pages of each track, either one, maybe have a little subsection where you kind of identify some of the major challenges, major challenge questions, or, benchmark problems, and things like that, because that would be something I'd really like to be able to incorporate in the communique, because that's something that can... kind of serve to have that can serve to influence future practice beyond April 29th and 30th when the symposium occurs and the summit ends. Like, if we have these sort of challenge problems that can have impact in the near future. So if people could contribute to the continue contributing to the synthesis and community input pages, we'll be using that as the material that we'll be incorporating, as well as the slides that we saw today and the slides posted at the earlier synthesis session. But that'll be the material that the editors use when crafting the communique.
Yeah, we're not going to be... Now is your chance really to, influence the body of the communique.
Right.
Peter.
The clarification. Does that mean, let's say if I were, of course I am not, were a hackathon champion in my hackathon project actually brings some insights into the overall theme, the overall discourse. You want me to make a post to the track community input page rather
yeah.
than on my hackathon page.
Oh,
is
I
that
see.
The point? Yeah, there's. I mean, there's
yeah,
the,
yeah.
I just wanted to make that clear so that people can operate on that.
Yeah, it's just just kind of less places for us to kind of comb and harvest the content, because we're going to be kind of focusing more on the track, because the track's more easily mapped to the, as Leo said, the track's more easily mapped to the communicate outline.
Yeah, that's definitely a reasonable request.
Yeah, and the track champions too. I mean, especially if they participated in some of the hackathons, can help draw out these illustrations or linkages.
Yeah, one other point I posted before is if for the hackathon leads, if you are planning to do the demo, especially if you're thinking of going to be there in person, don't just do that, because we archive the material and it has to be to address the needs of asynchronous participants. So you would need to make like videos of your demo and so on. I posted a link earlier, so please look through that. It may mean a little bit more preparation work, but it's definitely worth it, because we might have, for example, 60 to 100 real-time participants at the symposium, but we're talking about thousands and thousands of asynchronous participants later. Also, from a post that I made to the list earlier this morning, the blocked hotel reservations will end by 5 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow. So if you want to enjoy the blocked pricing, discount pricing, please register your hotel. And of course, if you haven't registered for the attendance at the symposium, please do it now. Don't wait.
Yes, it's very important. And, we'll, the organizing committee tomorrow will talk about some of these issues too. Andrea.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yes, I had to go on mute. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. I just added a little comment, just building off of what everybody just said, to, actually take a look at the track A synthesis. I mean, you suggested that, but there's a lot of areas where we could go into a lot more detail. I'm not sure people care or want more detail, and so getting feedback on that, we could expand on the topics, the examples, and also given all the dialogue on that reusable email, there's lots of good discussion there. I'll take some of those topics and bring them back into our synthesis too, but I just wanted to build on, what everybody just said.
Yes, good. Yes, we do encourage people to look at the track content, especially the community and synthesis pages, and, provide direct input to the co-champions if you have an important point that hasn't been made. Now is the time, really. Okay, do we have additional comments?
Otherwise, we could wrap up now. Yeah, no, I say the presentations today were great. That'll be that together with the track synthesis pages will be the inputs to our document. And I believe the subject for next week is, I guess, discussing the draft communique. Is that correct?
Let's see on our schedule. I have to go back.
Right.
To my...
So the next week is the communique review, and Leo and I will be kind of chairing that session, and in addition, the two other editors, Francesca Quattri and Todd Schneider, will also be there, kind of, well, think of it as kind of like a bit of a panel. We'll each be sort of panelists and be presenting kind of the state of the communique. It'll be kind of like the rough first draft, if you will. And so people can kind of comment on things that are missing, et cetera. And then the following week is where we'll kind of present the final version of the communique. People have the ability to, well, actually, after next week, after we post it, then it'll be kind of open for comments. People can suggest changes, rewrites of text, et cetera. We'll kind of go over the process, that process next week. But between now and next week, it'll be kind of incubating within the, it'll be in its cocoon for the next week. And, you know, we'll, after next week, then we'll kind of open it up for broader comments. Okay. If there aren't any other remarks today, then thank you, everyone.
Yeah, thank you, everybody.
Talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Great session. Thank you.